I've worked with a number of colleges with different years from first year college right up to master's, and it's really heartening to see higher education now reach out to social enterprises alongside other businesses, you know, to get involved in projects for students.
Welcome to the From Passion to Action podcast, a discussion about social innovation and social entrepreneurship from Dublin City University. I'm Dr. Eimear Ní Bhradh.
I'm Donica Kinlan.
And I'm Meeta Power. In this series, we talk to academic experts in social innovation and entrepreneurship, social entrepreneurs who have founded their own social enterprises, and community organisations that are contributing to meaningful social change.
The aim of these conversations is to delve into the concepts of social innovation and entrepreneurship in theory and in practice, to discuss why they are important in today's society, and above all, to explore ways to embed these concepts in higher education across different disciplines.
The From Passion to Action project is based at Dublin City University and funded by the National Forum for the Enhancement of Teaching and Learning in Higher Education. We hope that you enjoy sharing these materials as well with your colleagues and with your students. Hello, welcome everybody to From Passion to Action, and one of our podcasts with one of the leaders of a very interesting social enterprise here in Dublin. So with me today, we have Maggie Clune, who is the Training and Social Enterprise Manager of PACE. So hello, Maggie, you're very welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Eimear. Thank you for inviting me.
So Maggie, you are the Training and Social Enterprise Manager of PACE. We'll come to PACE now in a minute, but we're very interested in asking everybody the same questions at the very beginning. So I'll start with those questions. What's the first word that you think of when you hear the concepts social innovation and social entrepreneurship?
Well, the first word that pops into my head is inclusion. That would be a word that would be very important to us and our social mission.
Inclusion of what type of people?
Inclusion of everybody, to make sure that everybody's included, that nobody's left behind. And for us in particular, we're working with people who've been to prison or people under probation services, people with a criminal record. And the criminal record comes with huge stigma and label. And even, you know, years and years and years later, after doing their time, they can be very much still excluded from society. And, you know, our social mission is to ensure that these people are included as opposed to excluded. So, yeah.
Okay, inclusion. Very good. What would be your own understanding of social innovation and social entrepreneurship? What is it? What are those things?
Okay, well, I suppose to start with social entrepreneurship, social enterprise is really, it's business, running a business, being a business with a social mission, where the top goal or the key aim is to deliver on whatever your social mission is, whether it's something to do with the environment, whether it's something to do like ourselves, including people. That's the main goal. I suppose, you know, over the years, it's become acceptable now as well for us to talk about profit and making money as a social enterprise, whereas before it was a conversation that you'd be afraid to have or nearly kind of say, well, you know, if we made a bit of money there, don't mention it. But the whole point is to make money and to reinvest into the business. And for us, the more money we make, the more jobs we create. So just being a normal business with high standards, good products, good services, but with a social mission. So that's what I think social entrepreneurship is. Mm. Now, social innovation, again, is, you know, coming up. Innovation to me is coming up with new ways of maybe delivering a service or maybe new products or a new way of delivering an old product, just coming up with new ways to reach markets and maybe, you know, creating more markets or finding a niche, finding where the gap is and developing something to fill that gap with the view to make money, to reinvest in your business and your social mission.
I think the key that you have there in terms of a social enterprise versus any other enterprise is how you reinvest those profits and to what aim. But we'll come back to that issue in a while, because people, as you say, can be very uncomfortable with a social enterprise making money. But yes, we'll come back to that. But let's go back to what PACE is. Can you tell us about PACE? What is it and how does it work as a social enterprise?
Well, I'll give you an overview of PACE. In general, the PACE organisation, we celebrated our 50th anniversary, I think 2 years ago or last year. It gets a bit muddled with all that's happened in the last 18 months. So PACE, originally PACE is an acronym for Prisoners Aid Through Community Effort. So way back 50 odd years ago, local community people realized that there was absolutely nothing outside of prison for men coming out of prison in particular. It started with men. So the accommodation services was the first part of PACE that was introduced. So Priorswood House, which is based in Priorswood, opened over 50 years ago. As a result, years later, over time, it became apparent that people coming out of prison were being excluded, and the men that were living in the house were doing nothing all day long. And obviously that had a huge impact on their well-being and their self-esteem and slipping back into old habits of maybe addiction and then criminality. So a training program was started, and that expanded. So then it became so big that there was enough to provide two services. So then we had the accommodation services and the training services, which developed further then into social enterprise. And then the third service offered by PACE is what's called prevention services. And there's three projects specifically aimed towards people with sex offences. So the three projects are called Safer Lives, Foothold and COSA. And Safer Lives is a therapeutic project working with people in groups. Foothold is about trying to rehouse people after prison when you have a sexual offence. And then COSA stands for Circles of Support and Accountability, which is a project that PACE introduced to Ireland, I think maybe 6 or 7 years ago. It started in Canada, and it's basically providing a social circle for people with sexual offences after prison, because obviously those types of offences, the biggest issue for people with sex offences is isolation and loneliness, and it's also one of the biggest triggers for reoffending. So if a social circle is built around these people to give these people the social outlets and people to talk to, then dramatically reduces reoffending. Mm-hmm. So PACE, we changed recently there just after our celebrations because we broadened our services so much. So now PACE stands for Prevention, Accommodation, Community and Enterprise.
Okay, very good. So staying with that last theme, enterprise, can you tell me about the social enterprises that PACE has and how they work, what they do, what benefits it brings to people?
Sure. So I joined PACE in about 2014. And so I came in as the training services manager, and we run two training centres. We've got one in Santry, which is a huge woodwork and metalwork warehouse workshop, very much industrial, very work oriented. And we have a horticulture project in Coolock as well, and a smaller wood workshop there. So when I started, we were doing training and we were providing FITAC level 3, level 4 certification through CDETB. We also have some industry standard metalwork qualifications that we do as well. And we then have the wraparound subjects such as communication skills, career development, people, you know, we have art classes, so quite a variety of classes. So people are getting their certificates, and it became apparent to me that, you know, and a feedback from the people who were coming to us, like with all the certificates in the world, they still weren't getting work. So there was a clear issue. Why aren't they getting work? Well, because employers won't take them on because of the criminal record. And the last known work, if any at all, was maybe 2, 3, 10, 15 years ago before prison. So there was nothing on a CV to say, this is what I can do right now. This is what I've been doing for the last few years. Or, any, you know, for anybody to say, I can vouch for him or her. They're a good worker. They won't let you down. So that piece was missing. So I decided then that, well, maybe we just need to create our own work. But it was, in the beginning, it was very much about doing something meaningful with time and making something that was appreciated by community, other people, you know. And it's become apparent to me ever since just how important that part of this whole process is. Like in training, the student makes something, whether they like making that particular thing or not. For VTAC level 3, it's a table. It's a very odd shaped table. It doesn't really fit into a standard house, a terraced house, three bed house. So it's kind of like, where would I put that table? So there isn't huge enthusiasm to make the table. So, you know, it's kind of why would anybody want to make it then? So we started making things that people wanted, and the change in our trainees, you know, when they started making, like, flower planter boxes was the first thing that we started making. And, you know, then there was a demand for them. That's really key, that, you know, somebody, you know, for me, if I'm making something and somebody really likes it and they really want it, that is like huge feedback for me. And it's also validating what I'm doing as well. So the first part of the business was the flower planter box and garden furniture. We started off in 2014, and we always had a good relationship with Dublin City Council in the area. And we invited the community development officer in our Priorswood area up for a meeting to see, was there anything that we could do to make for the local community that they could fund and that we could give to the local community, you know, from a woodwork point of view. The reason behind all of that really was, you know, to show the local community that, you know, we're good people and we make nice things and everybody deserves a second chance. And also, to create work and to create a bit of a demand for what we were making. So we started off really small in 2014 with our local community development officers in Dublin City Council. And we grew the business from there.
Yes, I've seen the planters around five lamps there driving down from DCU to the city centre and around East Wall. So the planters are out in very public areas with your branding on it and so on.
Yeah. So we have taken over Dublin City when it comes to flower planter boxes and street furniture, garden furniture. So, and very simply, we put our number on the side of the box and that generated calls. Where can I get one of these boxes? And then, of course, other Dublin City Council community groups, officers realized, okay, there's something in this, and we realized there's something in this, because what we were making, really private sector weren't interested in it. It's very niche. You're dealing a lot with communities, you're dealing a lot with community groups, and we're very much of the community. So it really suited our social mission in lots of ways, whereas for a private commercial operation, if you like, it's not really what they're looking to do. So, you know, we're making ad hoc stuff, custom made stuff, and dealing directly with community groups now. So it really just grew from there. And you know, we've really, within 2 years, then we were in a position to apply for CSP funding. Are you familiar with that?
No, please explain to us what CSP funding is.
Okay, so it's like the Holy Grail for social enterprises. And that was kind of always my goal from the beginning. I'd heard about community service program funding, which it comes from Department of Rural and Community Development, and it's managed through PUBL. And, you know, when I was looking for it at first, it was kind of like this funding stream, but like, it was kind of like, I'll tell you, but I'd have to kill you. Don't tell anybody I told you how to get this, you know? So it was like nuts in the beginning. But so I searched around, and a few, you know, there's one or two social enterprises that have been going a long time who kind of know, who knew back then how to access this kind of funding and support. And so eventually I got to the right person and we put in an application. So you have to obviously, like normal business plan, do your 5-year plan, show how your social mission is going to help, or how, you know, how you're going to achieve your social mission. So we were then awarded the CSP funding, which is a contribution towards wages. So it pays about, so it's for a general operative, there's a contribution of about, I think it works out about 70% of their wages. Now, you know, we're paying people the minimum of the living wage, and that's our goal, is to never go below that. So we're topping up everybody's wages through the profits of the social enterprise. So yeah, we managed to then create, and since then, we now have 7 full-time people working in the social enterprise who are being paid proper wages, which is fantastic.
When you say 7 people, this is 7 people who are making the garden furniture, the street furniture.
Yeah. So they're working 39 hours a week and they're making products all the time. So between making the products and looking after the polytunnel and the flowers, and then we have a van driver as well. So we deliver everything now ourselves. So we were able to invest in a van to deliver everything ourselves, run the business. Oh, we wouldn't have happened. We were very, very early on, we realized we need to be able to deliver this stuff ourselves, because, you know, it's big, bulky product. So we had to be able to get it out there ourselves. Yeah. So, yeah, so we've got that many people working for us now. So then sort of maybe 3 years ago, I think it was around 2018, just again through feedback from the people that were coming to us, not everybody wants to make things. So we were like, well, what else is there that you'd like to do? So it was kind of like, well, what about customer services, or I'd like to start my own business, or I'd like to work in retail. So we were like, okay, well, how do we get people ready for that? So we initially decided that we would look at opening up a cafe. And we looked into that, and initial investment kind of scared us a little bit. I don't mind admitting, because, like, you know, we said, well, we're going to have to find a lot of funding, we're going to have to invest a lot of money to get this up and running. So we decided then, well, actually, let's do this on a smaller scale. So we decided on a coffee cart. Now, the coffee cart took us about a year to build, because we were building it ourselves from our profits, and we have a metal workshop and a wood workshop. So anytime we weren't doing something, we were kind of, oh, well, let's do a bit more on this coffee cart project. So eventually we got it ready, and we found a pitch outside Cloverhill Court, being supported by the IPS over there. They said, yeah, you can set up
the outside IPS, there. The Irish Prison Service.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we were there for about 3 months when we realized we don't have the footfall here. We're not going to be able to create jobs. And we don't want to rely on funding for this. We want this to wash its own face. This, you know, we want to really show that we can
stand on its own 2 feet as an enterprise.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. We need to prove this now at this stage and create jobs for people ourselves, you know, through a normal standard operating business. So we heard that the coffee shop in the forecourts was closing. So we took the opportunity to approach them to say, well, we could just pitch up in your car park. And that worked for them because they needed the space for more offices that, you know, where the coffee shop used to be. So we arrived there, I think it was 2018, towards the end of 2018, and we're still there. So we're operating. It's fully operational based on normal standard business, paying currently one barista because that's all we can have for social distancing. But it's also provided, I'd say, about 12 people with work experience in a hospitality, customer service, customer facing, highly stressful environment, because the person who works there is essentially running the business.
So this business, you have a very clever name for it, this coffee cart. It's the mug shot. So I think very clever name for a coffee business outside the forecourts in Dublin.
Yes.
Staffed and managed by people with convictions or former prisoners.
I have to say I was a little worried in the beginning when we chose this name. And how we did that was we just ran a competition amongst the team. So everybody got to throw a name in the hat. So, you know, we had some interesting suggestions. And the mugshot, and I was like, oh, that is so good, but God, it's a little risky, isn't it? So we sent out, myself and the CEO kind of narrowed it down and then sent it off. We employed the services of a small little marketing company.
Yes.
And we sent a few names off and they said it's a no-brainer, has to be the mugshot. So I was like, oh, okay, right, you know, I know, but... So just a little bit nervous. It is a little tongue-in-cheek, but, you know, we're not making fun of, you know, the harm that crime causes.
Yes.
And as you know, we're very much about moving forward and not looking backwards. But you know, everybody that we work with, that's their goal as well. You know, they have done their time for whatever crime was committed. And it's about moving forward. We do know that crime does cause harm, but people are entitled to get on with their lives. And the only way for people to come back into community is to include them, and that has to be through, you know, letting them back in, and that's the community accepting them.
Yes, and the strap line you have is coffee with character, and I think that word character fits as well with the character of these people, that they have decided to take the better path, let's call it, and they, you're giving them the support to make sure they stay on that better path. How do people react in terms of the staff working in the forecourts? Do they ever meet the judges or the solicitors? Who?
Oh, yeah. We have a very loyal customer base who love our coffee. Our coffee that we're serving is Moi Coffee, which is also a social enterprise. I don't know if you're familiar with them, are you?
I have it in my own kitchen, Moi. It's a
okay.
Packaging in the one I have, yes.
Yeah. So yeah. We were very clear that we would be working with a social enterprise as a coffee supplier, so their coffee is fantastic, and it's very popular blend down in the forecourts, and we have a very loyal customer base who just have to go and the barista knows exactly what they want. So yeah.
And is it open to the public as well, or do you have to be, you know, it's in the grounds of the forecourts, it's not on the public street?
Yeah, it's in the grounds. So generally you'd be doing business in the forecourts, or there's the land registry office and a couple of other buildings around there. But I to go into the forecourts, you do have to go through security anyway. So you'd only be really going in there if you know, if you've got business to do in there. So during the pandemic, obviously a lot of the courts went online, so that was like, oh no, what will we do? But we decided that we were going to stick it out. It's a great pitch. We have a loyal customer base there. So we just said, look, we'll stay and, you know, hopefully we'll make it up again towards the end of the year. And yeah, we're back in business now, and we've recouped any losses and any wages that we invested in the first part of this year. We're back on track again. So it's, you know, it's good.
So you mentioned earlier on when we began having a chat, Maggie, you mentioned that social enterprises are enterprises that run themselves like any other business to make a profit. The difference is that that profit is invested back into whatever social issue is being addressed. In this case, it's providing employment and career paths for people with convictions. Is it running completely independently without grant aid, without additional funding? You know, is it managing to stand on its own two feet as a business? Take out the pandemic, you know, the business model works.
It is now. Initially, we got funding through ICE, Inner City Enterprise, which are funded through Dublin City Council as well. So they're quite supportive of social enterprises. So that's where we kind of got our initial seed funding to get up and running.
Okay, which and ICE Inner City Enterprise would be similar to the local enterprise offices that provide support and training and mentoring and funding to private for-profit enterprises. So
in those days, it wasn't so easy to get money. Social enterprises don't get money too easily from the local enterprise offices. Now, things are changing. And I have to say, the local enterprise office in the city centre have always been very supportive of PACE and the mugshot. But, you know, there's different criteria. I think we may have been the first or second year to apply for the specific social enterprise funding. And so we were awarded it, and which was absolutely fantastic because, you know, a lot of people thought we were a little bit, really? A coffee cart ran by people who've been to prison? Okay. It was like, so there was that little bit of skepticism around it. And, you know, and a large part of our social mission is to try and change attitudes. You know, not everybody who's been to prison is a thief. You know, the assumption is, but there's going to be cash. Yeah. You know, so, you know, there's lots of assumptions and made by people when you have the stigma of a label, of criminal hanging over you. Yeah. So it was fantastic to get ICE, the funding from ICE to get the mugshot up and running. Even for those reasons, to show, you know, the community that, you know, whatever's happened, people have done in the past, that there's, you know, everybody deserves a chance and has the ability to change their lives around. Given opportunity, opportunity is the key to it all. It's just putting your faith and trust in somebody and showing them that you trust them to be able to do it.
And these people would have gone through a lot of training with you in PACE beforehand. They're not coming straight out of prison and going to work in the coffee shop. You're working with them on their FITAC qualifications and so on to prepare.
Yeah, I mean, a mixture. It really depends on the person. We get such a mix of people. And I suppose they're very different skill sets as well, like working in retail, working as a barista is a very different skill set to making the flower planter boxes and garden furniture. So I don't think we've had anybody come up through the ranks that way.
I suppose what I'm saying, Maggie, is that, you know, the person doesn't come out of prison having served their term and walk straight into a job with the mugshot. You're going to train them up and they're suitable for employment there.
Absolutely.
They are trustworthy and so on.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we need to get to know a person, like any employer. We do the interview process, just standard normal stuff. Anybody who's working in the mugshot is an employee of PACE. They go through all of the standard recruitment processes. Now we will have more information because we're funded by the probation services, and there is consent usually given by the people that we work with that probation services can share information with us.
Yes.
So we know exactly their backgrounds, and that's really important because we need to know and discuss with them what supports we need to put in place for this to be successful for them.
Yes.
So every single person that comes to PACE has a key worker. And that's another key difference between a standard commercial enterprise and a social enterprise, for us anyway, is to provide the extra support there that's needed for people who, for whatever reasons, got them into trouble and got them into prison in the first place. Mm-hmm. You know, those issues don't go away just because you've done a spell in prison. Those issues, a lot of people come out of prison with the same issues that they go into prison with. And a lot of people do a lot of work on those issues in prison as well. You know, the psychology and counselling and training in prisons as well. But a lot of the time people are coming out with very similar issues and even more issues. Maybe the family don't want them back in the family home. You know, there's a very big difference to not using drugs in prison and, you know, going back to, old
suburb or community.
Yeah, going back to your community. So an awful lot of support needs to be invested in people who've been to prison. And we provide that support through our key workers as well. So, it's just really important that we put as much in place for the person to be successful as possible.
And do you envisage that these people will work for X number of months or years in the mugshot and then move on to, let's call it, for want of better term, an ordinary standard mainstream coffee shop?
Yeah, we usually say mainstream. Yeah, it's kind of a term that we use. Yes, absolutely. And so one of the, certainly in the flower planter box and garden furniture, you know, the funding support that we get through PUBL, the CSP funding, one of the criteria is progression. So, you know, the goal is to move people to progress into mainstream work. So that's very much our goal. So we have a careers person as well. So from the day somebody starts with us, they'll meet with the careers person and they'll start working on what it is they want to do, start preparing CVs, start doing role play in interviews, alongside gaining the work experience and, you know, being in the work. And, you know, so there's an awful lot of work that goes around the person, wraps around the person.
So from the point of view of a social enterprise, your aim is to have a higher employee turnover. You want them to move on to, I suppose, to mainstream employment.
We do, yeah, because, you know, the more people we can move on, the more people we can move in to support. Now, that hasn't been very easy over the last 2 years. So, you know, we're going to have people with us for a while, and that's okay. But we were very lucky in that we didn't have to let anybody go. Mm-hmm. And that was because March 2020, was it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
We were sitting in here early March 2020 just about to have a big meeting with a customer who was going to pretty much secure an order for 6 months, and we both thought we're laughing, you know. And all of a sudden, pandemic struck, and that customer's money had to be diverted into dealing with the pandemic. So that order was gone.
Yes.
So we were left here going, oh my God, what are we going to do? Like, we've got to make sure these men don't lose their jobs, because, like, detrimental, you know, all the work they've done on themselves and invested in themselves, you know. The risk of then sitting at home, it was just too much. So we said, well, we've got to go online. We've got to target the consumer. We've got to get into people's homes. And so that meant changing our product line. So we came up with a couple of three or four different products that could be sold to consumers, domestic market. And then we started selling our flower bedding and hanging baskets as well. So there was a couple of those kind of products that we had to come up with. And then we partnered, we approached Alone and said, look, we're Alone, the organization that looks after older people.
Older people, yes.
And said, look, if we advertise we're making window boxes, and that give people the opportunity to buy them and donate them to you, and we'll deliver them. You don't have to do anything but take them. Yes. Could we do this? And they were delighted and said, absolutely. We've got older people all over Dublin alone in their houses, terrified from this pandemic. To get a box of flowers to arrive at the door would just be great.
It's kind of like a version of the Christmas hamper arriving at the door, except it's a flower box ready for your windowsill or your front garden.
Exactly. And it's, the older person then has to look after it, has to water it. It's colourful. It's living. It's going to grow.
Yes.
That really worked for everybody, because we were getting to make the boxes. It was keeping the men in work. The general public were getting to buy them and donate them. So, they were getting to feel good about that. And then the older people were receiving a nice gift. So that really went very well. So we got that up and running for the summer of 2020, and that really worked well for us. And certainly then that helped us get our window boxes products out there on social media.
Those boxes are bought by private individuals like myself, who wants to give it as a gift to some elderly person living on their own. So that the business model is that I'm in a way buying a gift for somebody I don't know.
Yeah.
And knowing that I'm also helping with the employment of these people with convictions.
Okay.
I'm interested as well, you mentioned early, it's nearly as if there's an ecosystem out there of social enterprises dealing with each other in parallel with, say, mainstream enterprise. So you spoke about Moya Coffee, which is another social enterprise. And then you speak about dealing with Alone or dealing with other public organizations. So it's interesting. There's nearly a parallel ecosystem there, that you all know each other and work with each other.
There certainly is. My first choice will always be to try, can a social enterprise do that? Like, for example, the hot weather, the guys are always looking for bottles of water. I say, well, let's stop with this throwaway bottles stuff. And I found a social enterprise called refill.ie, and they're making reusable bottles from sugarcane, I think it is. I said, right, well, I'm buying 20 of these. Everybody put their name on them, and that's what you use for the whole summer. There's the drinking water tap. We've got to stop with all this plastic. So I suppose I'm certainly in the mindset now as well, what social mission can I support in my purchase? And I try to encourage that as well. Now, listen, I'm not, I do my best, but
you're still down in the local supermarket as well.
Absolutely, yes.
I don't think we're not denigrating private for profit enterprise. It has a role as well. But that if we have a choice, and if we care about a particular social issue, at least we know by buying these daily purchases that we want, we know we're helping that social issue. I think we're not trying to denigrate private enterprise.
No, absolutely not. I mean, my background, I started my career in private enterprise, and that's where I grew up, if you like, from college up until about 10 years ago, or maybe 15 years ago. Time is moving very quickly. And I loved working in it. In that sector, I was in sales and marketing, and I started in customer services, and then I moved into sales and marketing for a big IT firm.
So why did you move from sales and marketing into being the training and social enterprise manager? What motivated you to change from private sector sales and marketing?
Yeah, I suppose two key things. Sadly, back then, so that was like my baby's 15 now, so, and he's my third child, and I just found that the industry and pretty much the industry I was working in wasn't very supportive of the working mom. I felt then it was very stressful, and I felt that I wasn't doing either job particularly well. So in terms of being a mammy and my account management job. So I decided, and an opportunity for redundancy came up, so I took it. So that was kind of a little bit of a time then to kind of think what I want to do next. And in and around that time as well, and I had no clue what was happening in the community. I didn't even know anything that was happening from voluntary sector, the third sector, knew none of that. And that same time, my mother had a very bad stroke after an operation, and she needed 24/7 care, and we wanted her home. So an awful lot of care was going to have to go into looking after her. And I started meeting people in the community, like community nurse, community carers, and that. And it just opened my eyes to this whole service that, and I was like, my God, I didn't even know you guys existed. And thank God. And so that kind of opened my eyes a little bit. And then I did a coaching course, mentoring and coaching course. And during that course, it gives you a little bit of time to, like, you have to be coached yourself. So it gives you a bit of time to think, but what is it I actually want to do? And I realized I actually don't want to go back to that kind of work anymore. But I have a lot of skills that I've picked up, and like I'm very good at business, and I'm very good at, you know, negotiating and building relationships, all those things that are essential in business. So how can I bring those skills with me to do something else? So then I started working in a community training center out in Finglas, actually, just doing a personal development program, and it grew from there. Yeah, I just never looked back then, just absolutely loved it.
Yeah, and that brings me to, other than the employees with convictions that you work with, what background do other staff in PACE come from? Do they also come from a business background? Do they come more from that community background that you've mentioned? You know, what have they studied if they've been to college? But what kind of background do people have who work in social enterprises or in PACE?
Well, certainly in ours, in PACE Social Enterprise, because we didn't start as a social enterprise, and PACE started a long time ago, well before me. So there's, like, in the training centres that I manage, a lot of the staff are working here a long time, 15 to 20 years. They would have started as instructors, training instructors. And so there was a huge learning curve, and we're on it all the time. We're still learning everybody working here. So I was asking those people, okay, well, you're not going to be a training instructor anymore. You're now going to be a workshop supervisor. And we're making things. And, you know, we're going to have to hit deadlines. We're going to be under pressure. You're going to have to start looking at quality control. We're going to have to put all these processes in place. But this is what our clients want. They don't want to just be trained. They want to work. So we need to respond to their needs, and we need to evolve, and we need to change in accordance to this, or we're just going to become obsolete. So people had to change, and everybody jumped on board because everybody was excited about making things that were of quality and that were wanted. And like, we get people, you know, emailing us in saying, I'm just selling one of your boxes, it's beautiful, how do I get one of those? And that, you know, that does an awful lot for a person's self-esteem. Mostly everybody who works in PACE comes from a social care background or one of those kind of qualifications. We have a huge mix of people in PACE, employed in PACE as well, in terms of some have been to prison, some haven't, some have, you know, been on the cusp of criminality, you know, mental health, addiction. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have a lot of people with who have lived experience, as it's called. So from a business point of view, I think one other person on my team, one had their own business, and he's a key player in the early days. The two of us were kind of like, are we nuts? And like, no, it's okay. You know, we keep each other going. So very few with actual business skills.
Yeah. So, and yes, you're operating, you know, a business So you don't have anybody apart from yourself with your sales and marketing background. You don't have a marketing department or a person who can, you know, is in charge of your online shop. How do you manage your online shop, which sells all your garden furniture and so on? Did you employ somebody with that background to run the online shop, or is it a service you bought in on contract?
No, we're doing it ourselves, and it's, I suppose a lot of it is like looking amongst the team that you have, the skills that we have here. So we, you know, for example, we've somebody in head office who has a particular flair and enjoys all the marketing kind of stuff. So she's been key in designing our mugshot brochure and our flower planter box PACE social enterprise brochure. And then we have a social enterprise coordinator who's funded through Pubble as well. And quite techie. He said, oh, well, I'll learn how to manage the online shop. We employed the services of somebody to set it up, and now the coordinator does as much of the managing of the online shop as he can. And like, if he needs to call in somebody with the skills, then we can get in touch with the person who designed it for us. We try to do an awful lot of the stuff ourselves, and sometimes, yeah, we should actually probably ask for help outside, or more than we do. But
In human resource management, we would call that talent management, you know, where you're looking at the talents people have and the interests they want. You want all of your staff to develop their careers, and you're tapping into their talents, interests and expertise. Staying with the marketing issue, Maggie, there's an argument that customers might use a social enterprise out of pity or solidarity or because of the cause, rather than because it's good quality products or services that are being provided. So how does PACE approach that issue, you know, for Mugshot Coffee or for the garden furniture business? You know, how much do you promote the fact that it's a social enterprise, or do you just say, here we are, we're selling good coffee, here we are, we're selling good garden furniture? How does it work?
That's a really interesting question, because it's not our experience that our customers don't expect good quality stuff and good quality coffee. Our experience is very much the opposite, that there is an expectation that what we're selling is of good quality. From our point of view, flower planter and garden side of the business, like our van says, pay social enterprise. So, you know, we're a social enterprise. We're on a mission to create work. And you can help us do that by purchasing our products. And I think my reasoning behind the mugshot is different then. We didn't go in there saying we're a social enterprise. Nothing about the branding says we're a social enterprise. We provide really good coffee, which is served by skilled, friendly baristas. And, you know, we never went out there to say, you know, everybody we've employed has a criminal record or any of that. And the main reason for that is, the flower planter business, there isn't really a face to that. Like we've got lots of people coming and going there, and down in the mugshot, there's one person standing or two people standing there. And, you know, it just seemed contradictory to put a big label on it to say, well, you know, we're trying to get people to forget about labels. So let's forget about it. It's just a business. And the person in it is a barista. It wasn't a great big plan of mine. It was just kind of like, I suppose, you know, it's a way of supporting the person. Well, we're not going to, you know, one thing that we don't need to be doing is down there telling everybody their business. So we won't promote the mugshot as, you know, a social enterprise for people with criminal records, really, for that reason.
So it's a coffee cart that sells good quality coffee with a nice, friendly, skilled barista. Yeah, from a customer point of view. Yeah. And have you any growth plans for the mugshot? Is it an enterprise you'd like to expand to other locations with additional coffee carts?
Yes, we have a coffee cart ready to go. So we've come very close three times to a pitch, and for reasons the pitch didn't happen. So I consider us pretty unlucky, to be honest, in those opportunities. Now there's a couple of tenders out there at the moment for pitches, so we'll tender for some of those. I suppose we're a little bit fussy as well in that, you know, the four courts has kind of spoiled us a little bit in that they're supplying the electricity and the water, and there's a toilet for the, you know, for the barista there. Yes. Now you see all these coffee carts springing up all over the place now during the pandemic, which is absolutely brilliant and fantastic. And it's normally people who've just found themselves out of work trying to do something with, you know, their time and invest in something. And, you know, a lot of these carts are making a killing, and it's absolutely fantastic. But they're all, you know, they're self-employed, and they, whatever standards they have for themselves is fine. As an employer, obviously we have, you know, we have to have certain conditions for our employees to work in. So we need a pitch where the person can go to the toilet, is the basics.
Yes.
So that's kind of, whereas, you know, all the other pitches are probably not, you know, there's, I can think of a couple of pitches now where they've pitched up on somebody they know's extended garden, and they've an agreement to run in and use the loo and that kind of thing. So we are looking for another pitch, and yeah, so if you know of any pitches.
Well, I'm thinking of national parks, for example, or
yeah,
public sector, publicly owned spaces, you know, so near the public library, or, you know, being in public spaces, but near a public building where you could make an arrangement in terms of that. I mean, it's a very good thing as an employee, access to a proper toilet. Yeah.
Yeah. There's actually a tender that one of the county councils have a tender out now. They're, as a result of queries from people, why isn't there coffee here? And vendors, like, why can't we set up in a park? So now there's a tender where we can actually put in for one of the pitches, which is fantastic to see.
You're competing like any of the other private enterprises.
Yeah. We'll just compete, and we will tell them about our social mission. So it'll be up to them if they see that as another positive reason to employ us,
yeah,
or to award us the contract.
Maggie, I'd like to go back to one thing you mentioned. You mentioned along the way a few times that you have received funding from the likes of Pubble. Pubble is the Irish word for community, and Pubble is a state organisation that provides funding for community development right across the country, rural and urban. You also mentioned that you got some funding from ICE, Inner City Enterprise. I suppose the point I'm making is that a private sector entrepreneurs and new startups, they also can access public support through the local enterprise offices, or if they're larger scale, they can access funding or support through the likes of Enterprise Ireland. So there's no difference there in terms of the accessing public support for mentoring or grant aid and so on.
Yeah, and actually that is a good point, because that is something that, you know, gets said to me a lot. But how can you compare yourself to a standard commercial enterprise when you get all this funding? You know, and we're funded through probation service as well. You know, and I do get that. And as you point out, there is funding available for commercial enterprises, private commercial enterprises. But also, a lot of the people that we're working with and trying to support come with an awful lot of needs. So, you know, that has to be funded to support the people, takes funding, because we have to have key workers. And, you know, my other discussion point would be that, you know, I really wish that we didn't have to exist at all. So, you know, if there wasn't a need for us, I'd be really, really happy. You know, so if mainstream employers are willing to cut us out of the loop, you know, take these people on themselves, give them the mentoring and support that is needed, you know, when you come out of prison, and allow people make mistakes, allow people not show up, allow people get used to working and develop a work ethic, then fine. You know, that makes my day.
You'd arguably love to, you know, reach a situation where pace didn't exist because it didn't need to exist. Yeah,
that would be the ideal, but that's not the case. And realistically, that's not going to be the case. The social enterprise, certainly in our sector, in the criminal justice system, is a huge, important step for a person on the right path.
And I think, you know, any funding, public funding that you get for, let's say, the rehabilitation or training services, it's better that the public funding is invested in that than invested in the dole or in additional prison places or additional probation officers.
Yeah, because that's the alternative, basically. So it's a much more positive way to invest money. And the Department of Justice in the last 5-6 years have really cottoned on to this, and have, you know, their strategies of late, certainly the latest one, which is a strategy for social enterprise and entrepreneurship and employment, is very much focused on driving the employment, enterprise, entrepreneurship side of rehabilitation, if you like, or reintegration.
So that's part of the Department of Justice.
Department of Justice, yeah.
And interestingly, in parallel with that, we have in the last few years, the first ever national social enterprise policy was devised, agreed, and published by the Department of Rural and Community Development. So I think things are changing and a lot is happening. There's a better understanding of all of these issues. And you're trying to understand better all of these issues, Maggie, because you've very recently embarked on a PhD. What's the topic of your PhD?
Yes, so I have started a PhD, and what I'm researching is I'm looking at entrepreneurship as a means or a way for labour market activation for young people in the criminal justice system. Yeah, so I suppose this has come out of my whole interest in enterprise. And I mean, the mugshot as well, in developing the mugshot, and to just watch people flourish as they're essentially running a business themselves, because that's what we let them do, is, you know, to develop those skills, is to see how can entrepreneurship, or if it can, help divert people, or young people in particular, to use entrepreneurial skills in a positive way.
And entrepreneurship is a very, it's very practical. It's about giving people, anybody who's learning, the practical skills to try out something. Okay, it mightn't have worked, but now we know one way that it doesn't work, and we learn from that, and it brings us closer to a way that something will work, whether it's developing a new coffee flavour, developing your coffee cart, developing a new piece of garden furniture that does or doesn't work appropriately. Yes, which brings us to, you know, our project From Passion to Action is about fostering and embedding social innovation and social entrepreneurship in higher education. What advice would you give to higher level educators who are beginning to tease out, you know, how does this apply to my subject that I teach? So could you give us any advice there? Maybe take a discipline or a school or a faculty that springs to mind, and what would you advise those academics in terms of embedding the concepts of enterprise in what they do?
I've worked with a number of colleges in with different years, from first year college right up to master's. And it's really heartening to see higher education now reach out to social enterprises alongside other businesses, you know, to get involved in projects for students. Most recently, I had a master's group investigate a potential opportunity for us. So they did a feasibility study for us. In the past, I've worked with a product design group, and they had to come up with a couple of products for our social enterprise. So it's really heartening to see higher education just even introducing social enterprise to students who, you know, really haven't got a clue what social enterprise is. To open the doors and to open their eyes to it as an option, maybe in the future. But I think that social entrepreneurship can be brought into probably every discipline, really, because even just take the product design students, you know, we could employ a product designer to work for us. But I think there's so much opportunity now for higher education to just kind of introduce their students to it. And it's becoming very popular outside of universities as well.
So go back to that, the example where you had a product design group. How did that work? You worked with their lecturer on saying we need this new type of flower box or we need new ideas on garden furniture. And how did it work?
So I gave them a few ideas as to what stuff we needed. So they broke them up into groups and they got to choose a project. So one of the projects was to redesign the mugshot. So our original design of the mugshot was we made it ourselves, kind of just guessing. And after 2 years of working in it, we realized, well, actually, you know, it could work a lot better if this was over here and that was there and that.
This is the cart itself.
The actual cart, yeah. So a couple of groups redesigned it and then had to present it to me, you know, as a proposal. I was like a normal customer going in, asking them questions. You know, they had to cost it and all that kind of thing. And then we wanted a high-end product because everything we make in the social enterprise at the moment is, garden furniture, flower planters. But we were looking at maybe tapping into a different market. So we thought, well, what about high-end furniture or something like that? So that was another project, and another group took that on. And so that was how that project worked.
The project on redesigning the mugshot cart or the coffee cart, that was product design students. They could have been doing that for Joe Bloggs, who wants to set up a new coffee cart and wants a new pitch. But if we look at some of the issues, the true work that PACE and the mugshot does is about marginalization and inequality and access to the labor market for people with convictions. So have you worked with any degree programs that are to do with equality issues or marginalization or health?
In my end of it, it's been pretty much related to solving a product issue or a service issue that we have. However, in doing that, the groups need to know the reasons why they're doing that. So it's very much a part of the whole process with the students is learning about the social mission. And with that comes the knowledge and learning around inequalities that people face. If you want to take our cohort, for example. So in any of the projects that we work with, well, why am I doing this? It's not just about a product. It's about solving a problem by creating another product or developing something so that we can sell more coffee. You know, what's really important for the students is knowing the reasons that we're doing all of this, and that's our social mission. And that's where they learn about the inequalities and how they can be a part of solving those issues through any of their disciplines, like any of the business students, any of the product design students. There are IT companies out there, for example, who are trying to solve technology issues in third world countries. You know, they're crying out for support from IT engineers. There's really, like, every discipline can get involved and work for a social enterprise.
I think even just setting up the link, you know, of an awareness, and just even just developing the awareness and saying, wow, today I met a former prisoner who has turned their life around with support, and look what I'm doing as well in contributing to that real life improvement of the working conditions, of developing that better cart for your, as you expand with the mugshot.
Yeah, I mean, I worked with a couple of marketing classes, and I suppose one of my goals was to let the business students, let the marketing students know that there is a whole other sector that they can work in and really, really love it.
Yes.
And that was really, it was very interesting to do, because a lot of the students hadn't even considered it. You know, they had their career path all panned out with the typical big companies that are in Ireland now. And I actually do think, yeah, go and do that, because you need to get that experience and then bring your experience, I suppose, like I did, and bring it into a social mission when you don't care as much about money.
Yeah, indeed.
About earning the big bucks.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think, you know, it brings me to one of my other closing questions is, what advice would you give to students who aspire to pursue a career in the area of social enterprise? I suppose you've, you know, just building that awareness, number one, we as academics can build that awareness and just show that that opportunity is available for students. But what advice would you give them if they say, you know, I do want to build a career in this area? What advice would you give the students?
I think it's a really good career choice, to be honest. I'm trying to remember myself back early 20s, I suppose, you know, my first time coming out of college, because I'll always be learning something. And as I mentioned before, like, I mean, I knew nothing about community. Now, I imagine there's many early 20-year-olds who know a hell of a lot more than I did. And my eyes were opened, shortly after that, as to the amount of opportunities that you can have in a career. I certainly got to a point where it was like, what's it all about? And I got to that point very quickly in my life. It's like, am I making absolutely little difference here, to be honest? Mm-hmm. And I just, I suppose I wanted to be contributing a little bit more to the community. It's a great way to be able to do that and use your skills and talents as well in a very positive way.
Well, it's interesting you talk about, you know, am I making a difference? From passion to action is the name of our project here. What's your main passion now in the career, in the role that you're in?
I would like to see my team, the people that are working with us, progress. And I suppose we all celebrate here when somebody gets a job outside of PACE. You know, there's cake and, you know, it's fantastic news. And if somebody gets their own accommodation and a job, it's just really to be celebrated. And they should be the basics for every single human being, just to have your own roof over your head and to be able to go to work. And particularly when you absolutely want that and it's all you want, and you want to be a good citizen and you want to contribute to society in a positive way. So I suppose that just needs to be easier for people, really. And I suppose that's what I'm working towards, is seeing that being a little bit easier for people. I want to promote, I suppose, amongst my own family, my children, just a little bit more tolerance and a little bit more open-mindedness.
Well, it's funny, you're passionate about all your employees leaving, and walking out the door and finding a job somewhere else for all the right reasons.
I know. When you've got somebody, like we've got somebody at the moment, and we're so reliant on them for a major part of the process, and you know he's so ready to go. We're just trying to push him out. I was like, get that person trained up quickly because this is going to happen. So then it's kind of like, oh my God. But look, then somebody jumps into their shoes and it's their time to shine then. You know, and then they start getting ready for mainstream.
Well, that's very good. And Maggie, I'm very happy with all of the insights you've given us in the work that you do as training and social enterprise manager. With Pace, and I have to go off now down to the forecourts and peer in through the railings to see the mugshot cart.
You can go in, you just have to go in the front door through the security and pretend you're going to court. And I don't think you have to pretend, but go and have a coffee.
I have to break into the forecourts.
Yeah. Thank you for listening to the From Passion to Action podcast. If you'd like to find out more about Maggie's work at Pace, you can visit their website at paceorganisation.ie.